Bienvenidos, bienvenue, herzlich willkommen, welcome to the 91st Minute. I'm your host, Vic Bell. I'm a football enthusiast and an inspiring coach who lives and breathes for the beautiful game. Whether it's football news, formations, debates, or coaches that seal their team's fate, we've got you covered. Thank you for stopping by. Fasten your seatbelts. The 91st Minute starts now. Welcome, everyone, to the 91st Minute. As always, I'm your host, Vic Bell. Today, we will talk about the end of the season. It's the season review time, and I decided it would be a dope idea to bring every top team in the EPL to the platform, one by one. No gimmicks. You guys have heard about a few of them already that have been consistent on the platform, and we would like to know, how did they like it? How did they not like the season? The first team that we're going to talk about is the team in white and blue trunks. No other team than Spurs. I couldn't do it by myself, so I brought the main man himself. Shegan, welcome to the season review of the 91st Minute.
Thank you, Vic, for having me. I'm actually happy to be here after that last season. So I'm happy to be here. Didn't think I would be, but I am happy to be here.
Yeah, listen, we all like the banter and things like that, but there's not too much to banter about. There's nothing to really banter Spurs. I think you guys did what you guys were supposed to do.
Yeah,
especially after you guys got Conte. No?
Yeah, we did. But, you know, the old salty fans will try to pull out that we still haven't won anything yet. So, you know, they'll try to throw that at us. But, you know, we won't listen to that kind of talk. We'll just keep moving in our direction and let them worry about us. We're not worried about them.
Exactly. It's that simple. Let's talk about expectations. What were your expectations at the beginning of the season? Like, what were your honest expectations? Not the super ego. Not the person who comes on the apps. I'm saying behind closed doors, when you put on the telly, you have your little drink, you have your little food.
Don't know, man, because this is going to go worldwide, Rick. I'd say at the start of the season, I was screaming title like every fan should think of at the very start of the season.
Yeah.
Reality-wise, I was probably looking sneak into the top four by accident. More than design, and that would be a great season, I thought.
Yeah.
I think it would be very hard, but I had the top four a lot different than where it ended up. I had Man City winning it, but I had actually Liverpool dropping out. I didn't see Liverpool having a season they had, but I thought Chelsea would be third, and I was unsure what Man United were going to see. But I thought, worst case scenario, we'll finish fifth, but we could sneak fourth if we had an unbelievable season.
Yeah, no, I'll take that. When you look back in hindsight, were your expectations met? Did you finish better than you thought you would? Because there were some key games that you guys had to win and that you did win.
Yeah, I think it was up and down. I mean, throughout the season, there's moments where that top four was a pie in the sky. It was nowhere near it. We were lucky to get top half. It was about winning the Conference League at best and just being happy with that and then maybe build on the season from that way. But then it got to the point where, top four was a legitimate thing. Then we kind of lost it in the middle of the end there and then gained it again. So it was up and down. So I'd say expectations overall, of course, they were met because I expected to get top four. And we did that. But it was more, we did that rather than, I knew we 100% were going to do it. At the end, it was like, no doubt. I had no doubt whatsoever near the last four or five games. I had no doubt. But 10 games before that, it was up and down. It could go anywhere.
No, you're right. You're right. So what feels better, Champions League football or are you finishing in the top four and Arsenal are not in it?
Can I have both? you know what? I'll be honest, and this is any Arsenal fan listening, I don't really care about Arsenal like that. I care about Arsenal for the day. The one day that we play against each other, that's when I care about it. I don't think about them. They actually, like, and that's how the tables have turned. a few seasons ago when we had Pochettino, he made a comment about we've got to stop thinking about Arsenal as the barometer of where we need to be. We need to think higher than them. And I did that. I don't think about them like that. I think about where we're going to finish in the league. They're not of concern to me because they're behind us. Well, they are obsessed with, oh, we've got to get back above Tottenham. We've got to get back. I don't even think about it anymore. It's the derbies I look forward to. And don't get me wrong, I look forward to them more than probably any fan alive. That's the favourite game of the season. But after it's done, I'm moving on and again, continuously going, where are we going to finish? What are we going to win? That's mindset. I'm not worried about Arsenal. So to answer the question, it'd be finishing the top four, way more important. I don't really care what they do down the road.
I agree. And it's important to have that mindset. But obviously, when the tables turn, you look at other ways to attack the opposition. Sure. So,
yeah. I mean, it's weird, but it just shows you how the levels have changed. Because if you go into any Arsenal blog or YouTube channel or podcast, even if you listen to your Arsenal, after the fans on your podcast, they will tell you they're worried about Tottenham. They're worried about Tottenham. Tottenham's a problem. We've got to get back to Tottenham. It's Tottenham, Tottenham. So it's always in their mouth. 10 years ago, we were never in their mouth. Never, never. They were like, who? What? Now they can't stop talking about us. And that just fills me with so much joy because I don't talk about them. Where before, I just used to think about them constantly. I need to get above them. We need to beat them. We need to beat them. Why don't we beat them? They always beating us. We need to beat them. Now it's completely turned over. And I love the fact that apart from the two games we meet in the league, and maybe if we meet in a cup, you guys are some club down the road that are trying to get where we are. That's what I know them as.
Wow. Okay. To the Arsenal fans on this platform, I hope you guys are soaking this up because there's a new season also that is going to come up and all eyes on Shegen. We want to see how he does next season. That's the beauty of football, right? But here's some numbers for you. Yeah.
Yep.
Before we get into the questions, 38 matches played.
Yep.
5 draws.
Yep.
11 losses.
Yep.
69 goals scored.
Yep.
40 goals conceded. 22 wins. Those are decent numbers.
They are decent numbers. What's your point? where are you going with this?
No, those are decent numbers. What's surprising to me is, does it generally happen that a team gets in the top four with 11 losses? It looks a lot. It seems a lot to me.
It looks a lot, but you got to put it in the context of this whole season. Apart from the top two, and maybe Chelsea were floating around, not really involved in anything. They were just in no man's land, just floating away, just not challenging for the league, not in the top four battle, not winning domestic trophies, losing in cup finals. Like, they were just floating around doing nothing. While the rest of the teams were all fighting amongst each other. And that's where you're going to get a lot of losses. And they were much more like, who was going to break out of that pack? Because there was a lot of teams. No one knew that Man United were going to fall off a cliff and be the worst Man United performance in Premier League history. No one foresaw that. No one saw Arsenal having a better season than they've had recently in terms of they finished eighth and eighth under this great Mikel Arteta. But now they had a good start to the season and they were grinding out results against the small teams. They weren't really beating any of the bigger teams. I think they beat us at early doors, but they were getting slapped around by Man City, Liverpool, Chelsea, they're getting beat by a lot of them. Do you know what I mean? So no one, and then West Ham were there or thereabouts again, taking points off people, again, making it difficult. So the losses don't really affect me in that sense, is that we had so much losses if we took the whole season into account. Because again, we had two managers. One of the managers racked up a lot of the defeats. While the other, if you look at his record since he came, only two teams got more points than him, Man City and Liverpool. So in that case, Let's kind of forget about the Nuno years or the months. and let's put it in context of what Conte done. Because that's how he's going to look at it. Because he's concerned, not what happened before me. I don't know. I haven't got what's in front of me.
Rightfully so.
So he's looking at it like, these are how many points I've won. So now he's got a full season. How many points can I win in a full season? So the 11 losses, yeah, they're a bit disappointing. I think in his tenure, I can only see like 3 games where he lost where I was like, yeah, you shouldn't really lost that game. It was the Southampton game at home.
It was a shocker. I didn't see that one coming.
Burnley away. That was a bad result. And then I think even I think they lost to Wolves as well under him as well, 2-0. And they were like, kind of like teething problems. Do you know, as you come in, you have teething problems. You can have that boost of the new manager coming in, but then you get used to each other, then you don't really know what he wants, and you make mistakes, and everyone's under pressure. I see that. But once he kind of smoothed those out and got into a rhythm and got a couple of players he liked into the squad, he didn't really lose many games that you think he should have lost. Only the Brighton one at the end, 1-0, when, you know, I think they're a little bit tired, a little bit jaded, but it is what it is. They're not there yet as a well-run machine. And that's what he's going to have this summer when he kicks in a well-run machine, I believe.
No, I can't wait for the summer. But before we go over there in the summer, we look at some new pieces, let's address some of the questions that I have on the list, given this, given the top season or good season that you guys completed. Who's the player of the season for you?
For me, it has to be him and Son. I think the fans, everyone, he got all the fan awards this season regarding Spurs for that. And the reason I say that to him is because at the beginning of the season, where we had a new manager, he performed. He scored goals. When Harry Kane went missing, he was the guy who went, you know what, I'm still here. I'm going to play to my best and try my hardest. Scored goals. We won a few games, obviously lost a few, but he was still scoring. Even when we were losing, he was scoring. So he never really dropped. He had a bad injury in the middle in December, so he might have missed a couple games. But for me, overall, it was by far his best season for us. And it was basically our talisman, because when he didn't play well, we didn't really win many games. Like, he scored a lot of goals when we needed to. And he brought back Harry Kane back to life. Like, because you looked at Harry Kane coming in and was like, well, this guy's still playing at the same level. And he's like, I've got to reach that level. And he kind of brought him up to his level. So him and Son, player of the season for me.
I couldn't agree more. Also, when it comes to missing games, I mean, he still had 35 Premier League appearances.
Yeah.
So
exactly. So he only missed about two or three in the overall COVID period bit where he got injured. But because of COVID, a couple of games got cancelled, so he didn't actually miss a bit. In that period, he probably had a couple of two iffy games, but he's probably carrying his injury at that time. So people need to be aware of this. So, you know, sometimes we're criticizing him, saying he's having a shocking season, we should sell him and whatnot. But
yeah, listen,
each to their own,
because I mean, 23 goals, that's a lot of goals, man, in the Premier League. Yeah. That's a lot of goals coming from a wide player, not somebody who plays centrally.
Yeah. I mean, he makes a lot of runs into the center, but he starts off wide, and that's what his tactic is, to make runs into center and to fill in the gaps where Harry Kane moves out of the way. He's the one to go into that space.
Mm.
It's cool, but he's not a striker. He started his season, I think he played up front at the start of the season because Harry Kane weren't playing, but as soon as Harry Kane came in, he was out wide and cutting in. So, yeah, great season by Heung-min Son.
Facts, I agree. This is the easy one, manager of the season.
Well, I told him he had to. No. Let me give some respect to Nuno, because everyone's going to shout out, and rightly so, he had a shocking total period. But without those three wins at the start of the season, we would not have finished fourth. And people need to remember that he won three of the bounce against Man City, Wolves, and Watford. Now, those three games, yeah, Watford you expect to win, but Man City at home, we seem to beat them all the time. And, you know, some Man City fans are, can't believe that, but it seems a bit fact. We seem to beat them when we need to. And then Wolves away, it's not an easy game to go and win. So I give him respect for that. But I mean, he was well out of his depth when he came to Spurs. And you could see he just didn't have a clue what he needed to do as a manager. So he can't compare. When you see the two next to each other and the levels of managerial experience and understanding of the game, second to none, you've got Conte, who's up and down, instructing players throughout the 90 minutes, to a guy looking at it where you've lost 1-0 to West Ham, had no shots on target, said that you've had a good game. That just tells you that you don't know what you're seeing. So you can't really, I'm not too sure how qualified you are as a top level coach. Yes, he got Wolves into the Premier League and he had a couple of good seasons. Cool. But at a top level, you need more than just a little bit of form and a one trick pony. You need to be able to master that trick, or actually have more tricks in your locker. So manager season, obviously Conte. And even there's a question that we had with saying overall manager of the season, Conte, because he came halfway through, Spurs were eighth, and he qualified for the Champions League. I mean, Klopp got manager season for winning the Carabao Cup and the FA Cup. Which one's a bigger achievement? Cup games against, I don't know, a couple of good teams throughout the season, not scoring in finals, winning on penalties against the guy who drags a team that is not really, wasn't good enough into the top four.
No, I agree. I wouldn't have given it to Klopp. Even though I love cups, but you know, given the squad depth, given the fact that I remember that you coach Liverpool.
Yeah.
Bro,
Cup, it's a bit small. Yeah. It's a bit meh. I mean, me personally, cups are great, right? But the hardest thing to do in any football country is to win the league, because you've got to show consistency over time.
Yeah.
Anyone can get into a cup final and beat nobody's all the way to the final. And even in the final, beat a team that shouldn't even be there because they got there through luckily. Because it's the luck of the draw. You don't know who you're going to play. Because I remember years ago, I think Arsenal won the cup and they beat Hull in the final. I mean, come on. That's what could happen. You can play nobody's in the final all the way up. You can play non-league all the way to the final by chance. That is actually possible.
Well, Shagan, hold on. You don't have to drown the whole thing. You still need to go out there and win cups, because there are teams out here who get to the final and don't win it. You know what I mean?
We understand that.
It's not that simple.
But I just think
for the level at which Liverpool is at, I'm not going to give Klopp manager of the season for winning two domestic. Why am I doing that?
Yeah, that's my thing. Because if you're looking at domestically, the manager domestically, you've got one who's won a league and one who's won the two cups. That's the bottom line. I don't care about the whole context about, oh, well, he stayed in contention until the very end. Okay, but the bottom line, he didn't win it. So let's look at the bottom line of what you won and what you didn't win. Because then we could add Tuchel in by saying he got to the finals of both cup competitions and he finished third. That's an achievement in some sorts if we're looking to give participation trophies. So that's why I'd say if you're giving it to Klopp, Conte, he needs a bit of recognition there as well.
No, yeah, for sure. I'm with you on that. Listen, no team wins something or achieves something massive, even when we're talking about finishing in the top four of the half, without a stellar defense.
Yeah.
Defensive player of the season. Got to be only one guy.
No, do you know what? Everyone's going to be shouting Romero. And I hear that. But I'm not going Romero. I'm going with Ben Davis.
You know what? That's a shout.
The reason why Ben Davis is that he's actually fortunate, because he wasn't playing at the start of the season. Conte's come in and seen that in his system, he needs a left-sided defender in a three that can come, that's comfortable on the ball. Ben Davis is a left-back by trade. He's played left-back, but he ain't great going forward. So he can't be your fullback, your bombing on fullback, because he's not that quick. His delivery is good, but he's like a 6 out of 10. But as a left-sided centre-back this season, he has been more consistent than anybody else in that team, I think, because Romero's been out injured and played unbelievable when he's been in, so let's not get twisted. But Ben Davis, without him in that team, it doesn't work the same. And this is probably why he's looking at players who can be a step up from him and compete with him, because we were lucky he never got injured. Because if he got injured for a large period of time, that whole back three would not have worked with Davison Sanchez playing left-sided, because it would have just been horrible. So for me, Ben Davis, he's a bit of an unsung, and no one would want to point to him. They'll just look for the big stellar names like, oh, Romero, he was bought for 40 million, so he must have been. And don't get me wrong, Romero, he had some games where he put people away and they didn't come out for the whole game. So let me be clear. He was very, very, very good. But for the whole season, I'm giving it to Ben Davis, because he played the whole season. Romero was out injured for big parts of it. When he went to the World Cup qualifiers in October, he missed the rest of the year and didn't come back until January. People don't remember that. So I give Ben Davis his credit and say, you know what? And plus, he's got his country to the World Cup as well. So, you know, Ben Davis for me.
Okay. We hear it, Shagan. Midfield player of the season.
This one's a bit of an easy one. It's are we talking about central midfielder or just any type of midfielder? I don't know.
We're definitely not talking about anyone bombing forward who could be under the realms of an offensive player. So
okay, it's got to be Bentancur then, because until then midfield was lacking, it was stagnant, didn't really have an idea of how to play this system properly. He's come in, and whoever he's played with has stepped up their level to play alongside him. So they know what he's going to do. Oh, this is what we're doing. And he kind of coaches them through the game. Like, right, I'm going to do this. You do the opposite or do the same as me. Blend with me. And then that's why it's worked. Without him in there, we wouldn't have finished fourth. We just never had controls of the game. We just used to panic. And again, it's getting used to a system, people getting used to managers' philosophy, not knowing how to go from a pressing game again that we've had under Pochettino or counter-attacking game under Mourinho to this controlled press that we have from Conte, where it's, we sometimes sit in a low block, but we're controlled in our actions. We're not panicking. And he brings it to the table where he can have three men around him. I still want the ball because I'm going to hit it first time. Don't worry about passing it to me. But other people will be like, don't pass it to me at all. Get away from me. And he just... He set control. So Bentancur for me, midfielder of the season.
Okay, forward striker of the season. We already said it's...
Yeah, it's got to be Son.
It's got to be Son. Yeah. Let's go into something more specific. Different games. Yeah?
Mm.
Game of the season for you.
This is close. For me, it's always the North London derby. And I think for what the game was highly on the line for this game, outweighed all the other games. There were better performances. We played better against Man City. We went to Man City and actually we taught them a lesson of what teams can do against them.
That was my game of the season, by the way, for you guys.
And we kind of opened them, because before then, the league was not interesting. Man City were going to walk away with the league. And we went up there, beat them. And everyone was like, oh, the league's not over. Then they started to crumble a little bit. But for me, the game against Arsenal, where it was do or die, and it was like, yo, you want the Champions League or not? You got to win this game. It's that simple. And then the fans turned up on both sides, actually. The few Arsenal fans that turned up, they tried to turn up, but they got drowned out by what I told people would happen is that this game was the first in this new stadium. The pressure was on for each player. It was a full house for once. And it means something more than just a North London derby. So these players would have to go into the atmosphere and deal with it. And I said that these Arsenal players have never been in this situation before. They're so-called kids. So I wouldn't even call them kids. They're just inexperienced because they're like 21-year-old, 22-year-old people. They're not kids. So they've not experienced of going into that kind of environment because we've never had it in this new stadium. So no one knew what they would expect apart from certain older fans who would go in there and go, you know what, if this noise gets really loud, this can be an intimidating place to play. And it happened. They were shell-shocked. Obviously, next season, they'll know what to expect now because they've been through it. So it'll be a little bit different. But this first game, they were never going to win, ever. So for me, for what it was involved, the emotions on the day, the results, how it kind of boosted Tottenham again to go again and killed Arsenal for the next game, yeah, that was my game of the season.
Fair enough. I agree. I you almost changed my mind. You know,
almost.
you almost changed my mind. No, I just thought the result versus City, the way you guys came out, played with character. You knew what you wanted to do. You knew where to hurt them, and they were they couldn't stop the bleeding. Like they could not stop. City did not know what to do. I remember many times. Harry Kane will do this whole little drop-in again and he'll be up there. He'll interconnect with people running off of him. Laporte was just having a tough time.
He was in quicksand. He didn't have to run. I agree with you. The performance at Man City was much better. It was like we literally picked them apart and they didn't know what to do. As you said, they were struggling to pick up with the runners. They just struggling to deal with the tactics. They couldn't break us down. I mean, they got a goal from a bad goalkeeping error and a penalty. That was it. That was the bulk of it. Where we know Man City to be ones who pick old people apart. They open teams up. They have chance after chance after chance. They didn't have that against us. They had a couple of, those are the only two things I can remember. And then we had the better chances. We had the control. Again, it's pressurized control. We were not nervous. And it's very dangerous to deal with a team who go into a game where you can't put them under pressure. They're very cool, calm, and relaxed. And that's when the new guys came in, Bentancur and Kulusevski, and they showed that control. It was no erratic behavior. It was just, we're just going to pass it. I'm going to control it. You're going to receive it. And it was just, it was almost dominoes. It was just that
right,
simple.
Right.
It was just that simple. And it was just like, how are they doing this? Why are you scared of us? Like, why are you not panicking when we come to press you? No, we know where you're going to be. We know we're going to pass. We know what we're going to do next. It was just chess, not checkers. And
yeah.
They couldn't handle it.
Yeah. No, what I enjoyed in that game was just the amount of pace that you guys played with. It was, let me not say never, but the way you guys executed it with the pace, top football. I mean, for me, it was top football, but that was the game of the season for me.
Okay.
Worst game of the season, Shagan. Because me, I don't have a worst game. I'll go first. I don't have a worst game, but I have a worst month.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, I'm up for the whole month.
I don't have a worst game. I have a worst month. And you know, the month of January. I mean, listen, you get peppered by Chelsea in the Carabao Cup.
Yeah.
First leg 2-0. Yeah. You come again, 1-0 loss. And then you see them again in the league that month, and they give you another 2-0 at Stamford Bridge. I mean, for me, I'm like, no, listen, you guys need to figure it out. You guys, you cannot lose to one team three times.
Well, four times in total, but that's a painful subject, that club over there. I'd have to, do you know what? That month, it was a terrible, terrible time. That's when they were trying to figure it out. They're trying to work out, what the hell are we doing here? Like, we need to know, because it was going wrong. Worst game, though. See, I've got two. So obviously, worst game for me was But worst games were under Nuno were against Chelsea and Arsenal. Losing those at home and away was bad. Chelsea won at home 3-0 was bad, because that actually didn't play that badly. We just didn't execute. Playing the first half, we had a lot of chances, through on goal a couple of times, but we just couldn't score. And then we just got steamrolled second half, and it was all over. Arsenal one, they just completely just battered us, and then we realized that we've got players who are not good enough to be here and they need to go. But then second half under Conte, I'd say the worst result was probably Wolves at home. That was bad, where it was just mistake after mistake after mistake, and then they just lost, and they had no. They were like, "What do we do?" And I looked around and went, "Woof, these guys, they don't know what to do. They don't know how to figure this out," and it just crumbled. It was not very good. Not very good. Not bad atmosphere. Kind of lethargic approach to it. Maybe the newer guys got used to the Premier League, and it was just, this is easy. And then they just went, oh, what's this? And then it was just a bit of a kick in the teeth. But yeah, those three, to add to your three, were my worst games of the year.
Oh, man. Okay. So there's always one guy that gets insulted, certainly in my club. There's always one guy that I absolutely despise, but the new season calls for, you know, a chance of them improving. So who's the most improved player this season for Spurs?
See, I don't want to repeat myself and say somebody like a Ben Davis, because in truth, it probably would be him. But if I was going to pick somebody else out that's also improved a lot this season, I would have to say I would say Højbjerg, to be honest. But it's only at the end he's kind of shown that he has a little bit more to him. Because at the beginning, he was looking very robotic, this guy is just not good enough. He's trying to do too much, exposing himself to being that he can't be that guy. But then at the end, when he got used to playing with Bentancur, you could see he can offer a lot. He may not be everyone's cup of tea. He may not be everyone's he must start every week. He has a place to play for Tottenham. He definitely has that. He's that guy that you need. Everyone needs that kind of, I don't want to say water carrier, because it gets badly labeled. But you need a guy who's not going to be looking for stardom, but he's going to make the team tick and then make the team work. And I think he did that near the end, where he did his job to the best of his ability, which was making tackles, getting the ball to other people. And then he sprinkled a little bit of like, oh, I can also pass and set up goals as well. Because he did have a couple assists for the season. So I'd say Højbjerg, most improved, other than Ben Davis.
I'll take that. I'll take that, Tregen. Worst player of the season.
Okay. I have to say, at the beginning, my worst player of the season would have been Harry Kane for the way he started off the season and his whole not playing, not being fit, not being involved, walking around the pitch, sulking, moaning, doing this and whatnot. Obviously, things happen behind the scenes that I'm not aware of and arguments that I have had, whatever may be. But there's a duty of care that you need to turn up to a football pitch and play your game to the highest level. Worry about the off-field stuff afterwards. And that annoyed me. It still does annoy me to this day. And I'm not really totally over that. But I can't not bypass the fact that we have a right wing back who's a fullback who, and it's not his, totally his fault, but he has been the worst player. He's made some shocking mistakes and errors. Give him credit. He came good when we needed him more. When Doherty was injured and he had 5 or 6 games left to play, he played all of them and he didn't do anything wrong in those games. So I give him credit, but there's never been a man that I've seen play a wing-back role and not want to play it. It's been Emerson Royal, where he'll be past the ball in acres of space and he'll be screaming inside of his head, can somebody please come and help me? Because he doesn't want to be there. He doesn't want the ball. He doesn't want to score. He's nervous and he wants to give it to somebody else and he wants to get out of the limelight. He's one of those players who's made it to become a footballer but doesn't want to be in the limelight. He just wants to play football and he wants to be in like part of the 11, but no one talks about me. I'm happy with that. He gets his money every week. I play my game. I go home. I'm not in the limelight. He doesn't want to be the star right back who gets more assists like Trent or whatever. He just wants to do his job efficiently. But in the system, as a wing back, you're going to have more of the ball, more than a lot of other players. So it gets highlighted because you get shifted the ball in space. So your quality or lack of it will be exposed. And unfortunately, that happened to him way too much this season where you're just like...
And I'm shocked. Shagan, I'm shocked that you don't like Emerson Royal. He was fantastic for my club.
Yeah, he was. He was for those, what, how many minutes did he play? 96 minutes he played in total?
A total of 98 minutes.
Yeah. So I'm not surprised he could probably, but he can do that because you can hide in a back four because you can just support play. You don't have to be, because the guy in front of you is the stardust. He's that winger who wants to do the razzmatazz. He wants to get involved. And you just back him up. You be his runner. You do all his running around for him. You do all his cleaning up for him. And that's all you do. And that's what he prefers to do. But in this system, he just looked terrible.
Nah, I definitely hear it. I definitely hear it. Okay, that was your pick for worst player of the season. I don't think I can complain with that. I agree with it 100%. It's got to be Emerson Royal. I mean, he sticks out as well.
Yeah, it's a shame. But you can't really put it on anyone else. He's just... Everyone else has had at least had moments. You can save some of that Bergwijn. He's not had a great season, but he had that clutch moment against Leicester where he scored 2 goals in a minute or whatever it was.
Right.
You could say Lucas not had a great season, but again, he scored goals when he needed to. And everyone else has had like bits and pieces. He's never really had that one game. Maybe only the game where it was against Liverpool, where he actually played well against Diaz. But again, that's because he didn't really do anything else. He just stopped Diaz. That was his one goal. And Diaz still scored a deflection free kick, but letting him run at you, he was very good at defending against him. So I give him a little bit of credit for that, but overall, without a shadow of a doubt.
So out of 10, right, Tregen, how would you rate your season out of 10, 10 being the best, given all the circumstances?
In all the circumstances, I have to give it an 8. Give it an 8. From what the squad actually is, because you kind of get clouded if you think, we got Dele Alli, we got Ndombele, they're great players. All they need to do is come good, blah, 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 blah. And we've got Harry Kane. And then you realize that the machine is not functioning correctly. Like, you got Harry Kane don't want to be there. You got Dele Alli, he's somewhere falling off. His talent has just disappeared from his soul. Like, you've got Ndombele doesn't want to run, just wants to play sand beach football. Like, it's that kind of thing. And then you put in context of where you are, where you think you are, and where you actually are, and then where you got to from just the manager's probably driving it and his will to win. He literally picked Tottenham up by the sleeves and dragged them over the line. And without him, they wouldn't have done that. So I have to give him a lot more credit for that, given that he only made two, he added two players to the squad, two. And this is not really his team. It's just two players he added that made that big a difference to get a team that was eighth to fourth. Yeah, I've got to give him an eight.
It's a good number. I think it's a fair assessment of what happened and the circumstances. I think Conte did an extraordinary job. Brought you guys to top four. I think it was extraordinary.
I think so. I really do, because as I said, without his insistence on doing it his way, that team would have just continued to falter and continue to just do nothing.
Yep. When it comes to positions that need to be strengthened, you've seen the season. Give me a little bit a peek within your mind. What positions do you think need to be strengthened? Maybe a couple of names that you would like to see at the club that you're perhaps linked with or not. I just want to get a sense of what you're thinking.
Well, if we look at it, let's get the biggest problem areas at the moment. The biggest problem areas for Tottenham are the wingbacks on both sides. They're not playing. They were just about functional. They weren't a threat as they should be in the system. So he's already brought in Perisic, who can play left wing back. If you brought, I'd be happy with just that, because then you've got a young Sessegnon in there who can play, who can learn to be more aggressive or more manly. I want to say manly. He still seems to be like a little boy, nervous sometimes, and you have to drag that out of him. Talent wise, physicality wise, he's got it in abundance. Very quick, got a good engine. Gets a few injuries, but you get that fire into him, he'll be somebody who can hold out that position for years to come. On the right-hand side, though, you've got Doherty, you've got Emerson Royal. We mentioned Emerson Royal being the worst player of the season, so that can't continue. Doherty, yeah, everyone's in the system, he played well, and everyone's will jump on the bandwagon and say that, you know, at one stage people were crying that he was injured and we won't make the top four because he was injured, because he was that vital to us. But only one of them can stay. I would keep Doherty, because in this system, he plays better. And I'll get somebody in who's... Ideally, I would get a younger guy. They've been linked with Jed Spence, and I'm happy with that, because he's a younger guy who can learn from Doherty, who can do it now. He can play in the system tomorrow against whoever we're playing and do well, Doherty. Where Spence is a young up-and-comer, we don't know if he can do better yet. He can grow into it, and it'll give him time to grow. And the pressure won't be on him to come in and do it straight away every single game. It's a lot for young players. You can't expect young players to come in every day, every game, every week, hit the ground running, and to be successful. Arsenal take check of that. So for me, I would get Jen Spence in, but keep Doherty as the guy who vies for that position. If you can get two plus Spence, then great. But I think Emerson has to go, and I think they sold the left-hand side. But you could have probably added another one, because Perisic can play right or left. So you could go two on the left and just keep Jed Spence and Perisic on the right. You could do that. It's very fluid at the moment. He's very committed, very flexible. The other position you're looking at is the back three. Again, I said Ben Davis played the whole season and didn't get injured. You can't expect him to do that again with Champions League football, and keep a high enough level. So you need a left-sided defender. Who that is, names are being thrown around from Bastoni to Vardiol, can't say his name properly, Pau Torres, even Bremer has been linked. Mm-hmm. I think that's the position he's trying to fix with the most amount of money. He's willing to fix that position with terms of spending the most on it. And I kind of agree with him. If you can upgrade on Ben Davis and have Ben Davis as the second guy to play in where you need to rest a few people, he can also play wing back as well, if needs must. And he's a solid pro. Again, he'll give you 6 out of 10 every week. It's fine. I would love Bastoni, but I'm not too sure that's going to happen. But they need somebody. They need somebody to be that opposite to Christian Romero. They need that person who's just as good on the left-hand side as the right-hand side. And then Dier could look... If they get that, Dier would look like a world beater. Everyone would be telling me he's the best defender in the world. But it's because of the two people around him making him look that good. And then I would look at midfield, because creativity in some games became a problem. When we couldn't get fluid counterattacks going, we struggled with breaking teams down. So there you need a creative midfielder. The obvious one is obviously Christian Eriksen. But
is he going to come back?
From everything he has said, he should come back. He has said he wants to play Champions League football. We got that. He has said he wants to stay in London. We got that. He has said that he wants to feel like part of things again. You've been here before. The manager has also said he would like to see him again. Even though they had a bit of a tiff at Inter at the beginning where they didn't understand each other, at the end, they knew what each other wanted. So it seems like a no-brainer, right? You put him in there, he can come in. And then the pressure won't be on him to play week in, week out to a high level. I think that could be the thing that he's worrying about, whether he has to come into Spurs and be that main guy who has to play every single game. I don't think he has to. He has near-death experience. Let's take it easy with him. He can play, he can come on, he can change games, he can play in the less emotional games where it's high energy, high intensity. He can play against the Burnleys, the Nottingham Forests of the world, that kind of teams, and just star out, because then they're going to have nobody who can compete with him.
Right.
But when you go into Chelsea away, where it's a bit more aggressive, maybe then he comes on as a sub and plays 20 minutes in the game.
Cameo.
You know, cameo roles, because next season with five subs, we need bigger numbers because we just got 11.
By the way, really quickly, you know, usually I don't like cutting you off, Shagan, but... are you guys sure you guys will be able to survive in that league with Pep with five subs?
Yeah. We don't know. Because five subs, people don't realize we've kind of handed it to teams like Chelsea and Man City now, who have the strongest squads, even Liverpool to an extent, because Liverpool also have a ridiculously strong squad, that they will be able to just bulldoze all the little teams. This could be a season where they only lose one game. Or none. It wouldn't really surprise me, because they've got so many people to call upon, and when you've got that much ammo in your arsenal, it's only so long before you shoot everybody dead. Yeah, it's gonna be difficult, but that's why we need to be clever and build our strength, not by world beaters, but by players who can all do it at a certain level, like Eriksen's. Eriksen's available for free. Pick him up for free. There's other players like that. You can pick up for free and build out your squad to a similar level that when you do play Man City in that one-off game, you can compete.
Are you going to keep Kulusevski?
Yes.
Are you... Well, Son is not going anywhere.
No. Sorry, Liverpool fans.
Harry Kane looks like he's not going anywhere.
No, he's not.
Will you finally go and get someone who can give him a rest, though?
See, I was having the same conversation the other day. I'm not sure, but because there's been links with Lukaku, and while we don't do business with Chelsea generally, it's a new day done at Chelsea, right? Mm. So that owner conflict that we had before is gone. So it's fresh eyes, fresh people, Americans talking to Englishmen who like working with Americans. So it could work. Chelsea obviously want to get rid of him. Problem is, Spurs are not going to give him £100 million for it. Not a chance in hell. They're also not going to give Lukaku £300 million. I mean, 300 grand a week. They're not going to do that. So for that to happen, he needs to take a pay cut and Chelsea needs to offer less. Will that happen? Not sure. But I could see Conte thinking about having Harry Kane and Lukaku up front and having the ability to change the two and play one week, play the other week. I can see him... ridiculously in that lovely fresh set of hair he's got, thinking that through and go, you know what? If we can pull that signing off, that could be amazing. Whether Lukaku would do it, given the fact that he's kind of annoyed the Chelsea fans to do this, you would really be enemy number one. And it takes a big set of kahunas to want to do that and live in London. And he kind of had said that he wants to go back to Italy. So maybe not. But if you really want to go for the jugular, that's what you would try to do. But financially, I think it's a bit hard.
No, it's definitely hard financially. But, you know, what you just proposed, it ran into my, you know, head. And I'm looking at it from a formation, three at the back, five from midfield, two up top. and the two, sometimes you could even do Harry Kane and Lukaku. That's
if you want to compete at this Man City level, that's what you need.
Yeah, that's what you need.
But it's just financially, we're not doped like Man City, so we're still on the old natural vibes, so we're not juicing up over here, so we can't do that. But that's what you need. You need to be. If they pulled that off, I would definitely, me shouting for the title wouldn't be that much of a stretch. It'd still be a stretch, but not that much of a stretch.
And Lukaku, we already saw how Lukaku performed under Conte.
That's the key. It's under Conte. So, not Lukaku that we've seen in the Premier League before, for West Brom and Everton, where he scored goals, blah, 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 and Manchester United. It's Lukaku at Inter that Conte can get out. And you put him next to Harry Kane, that's a different beast. Because if you think his link-up play with Son is great, it'll be so easy to link up with Lukaku. He'll find him all day long. And he doesn't need to be that precise, because he can put it in the air and just go fight for it. And 7 times out of 10, he'll win it. Mm. So, yeah.
We'll see.
Not sure. We'll see.
For sure. Okay. And Lloris still in goal. Still nobody to come and challenge that.
Nah, there's no one really. At the cost of it, you'd rather spend your money elsewhere. Get a backup keeper, yes. I think they're talking about Fraser Foster. Get him in, backup. He'll come in one or two games where Lloris needs a rest. Fine. But you're talking about people who are so-called next ones up, the Hendersons, the Dean Hendersons. I'm talking about just English goalkeepers. Nick Pope at Burnley. You're talking about £40 million. You're not really looking to spend £40 million on a goalkeeper who's not going to play now, might be good in the future. Nah, it's not worth it. So you let them stew for a bit, and then if you become desperate and you know that's the keeper for you, then go buy him. But at the moment, there's nothing wrong with Lloris for another year and a half.
One more question before we move on. Ndombele, is he coming back to the club?
He's going to do a flying visit. What's going to happen is he's going to come back to the club, do pre-season, and go straight back out again. He's got no future at the club. So you'll probably see him at pre-season. Everyone, all the papers, he's been given another chance. No chance now. He'll be back out on loan by the end of the window. Because probably no one's going to buy him, but he'll be back out on loan. They'll get his wages off the books. And that's the main thing. As much as getting money for him will be great, they'll get wages off the books as well.
Okay. Well, Shagan, listen, it's been fantastic to hear about the season review and your thoughts about Spurs.
Thank you.
I think it was a great deep dive into your mind and how normal Spurs fans think about think about their club and how they performed during the season. I definitely give the season, I agree with you once more, 8 out of 10. I couldn't have said it any better. Stellar. It was precise. You guys executed when you guys needed to do it. And I might even add that whole little Spursy thing, Conte started chipping away at that. So
No, Vic, I'm going to clarify this. That has been blown out of the water again. And I told people this before. When everyone was chatting about Spursy, when the last two games of the season, when we had to beat Burnley and beat Norwich, and I said, everyone was like, oh, might be Spursy again. I said, no. And the reason why, go listen to what Conte said. When somebody tried to bring it up, he completely shut it down as if, I don't know what you're talking about. I don't even believe what you're saying. What is this nonsense you're talking about? I don't know, no Spursy. He shut it down. I said, that's the mentality he's now giving the players. And you saw that in the Burnley game, even though they were tired, professionally, 1-0, boom, got out of there. They did what they had to do. The Norwich game, when everyone was like, oh no, it could be Spursy again, they shut them down quickly, 3-4-0, it was 5-0 in the end, but it's 2-0 half-time. Game over. They were professional in that. We're not even just going to beat you 2-1 and make it tight and make it close in the last minute. Harry Kane won the goal, wins it. No. We shut the talk down. We made sure that Arsenal fans were leaving the Emirates at half-time because they already knew that the game was over, that their season was done. Even though they were winning their game, we were not losing. There was nothing to hope for. They had to go back up the Seven Sisters Road and go back to their houses. There was nothing left for them. And that's what he's brought in. He's brought in this kind of mindset of, I don't believe in this dispersive thing. I don't believe in it either. It's just a media word that is catchy, that they bought onto it. And then some fans take into it and don't understand that this is a new day, it's a new dawn. we're not under that same kind of regime.
Okay. We like the energy here at the 91st minute. Ladies and gentlemen, this was Shegin. And obviously, we're not done with you, though. We do have a little bit of quick fire for you. I know you think you're off the hook. The season is over. You know, yeah. We just have some things here that we just want to throw at you. Just some general football questions, you know, and then you can go about your business. Okay?
Thank you. Okay.
All right. Shegin, are you ready for a round of quick fire?
Born ready.
Ooh, born ready. Okay. Quick fire starts now. Who has looked the best partner for Christian Romero this season?
Davis.
Second question. How far will you dive into the Champions League next season?
They'll win the group and quarterfinals.
Third question. As a Spurs fan, what do you want more? Win the league or the Champions League?
I want that league. I want a league.
You want the league, yeah? Okay. I want a league. So all of these.
I'm not gonna lie though. The Champions League, for the moment, it's a great moment. But I gotta be honest. I want that league.
You want the league, but yeah. The Champions League, you're part of the big boys, man. No, it's undeniable.
I know. I don't want to be that club that's won that, but not won their own league.
Facts. So in their prime, Moussa Dembele, Eriksen, Modric, rank them in importance.
Moussa Dembele, Modric, Eriksen.
In their prime, and tell us why. Didier Drogba or Samuel Eto'o?
Samuel Eto'o, simply because the guy was, he was electrifying at stages in his career. It was electrified. Didier Drogba, unfortunately, he played for Chelsea, so I only like the bits that he did for Marseille. But no, Samuel Eto'o, he gave me some classic goals. So did Drogba, to be fair, but no, I think that is actually harder than I thought. No, I'm sticking with Samuel Eto'o. Just his involvement with that Pep team that he played with Henri and Messi up front still gives me shivers to this day. Some of these goals he scored against Real Madrid. What I liked about him is when he never let go of the fact that this club let me go. I want to bomb on them every game I see them. Even when he played for Mallorca, he would bomb on them. Yeah. You let me go, I'm going to show you what I can do. And that, yeah, I give him respect for that because he did it for with every club he played for against Barcelona, Real Madrid.
Next question. Once again, these are players in their prime. Hmm. And I want you to look at the nucleus, so the midfield that you have right now. I would like you to tell me who you would take and why. Toni Kroos, Mesut Özil, Schweinsteiger.
Wait, why did you do that to me, man? You're making me pick that guy I don't want to pick. I'm taking Mesut Ozil's prime at Real Madrid. Not his Arsenal days. He didn't do nothing over there. But his prime at Real Madrid for unlocking and his assists that he did that season, that's what we need. We need a guy who's got the master key for unlocking all locks, all defences. We need that guy.
You need a master key, yeah?
We need that guy.
Okay. Next question. Please add the why. Frank Ribery or Arjen Robben?
I'm going with Robben. Robben was more single-minded, so much so, he had one trick and he didn't care that you knew what he was going to do. He was still going to do it anyway, and he did it. Ribery, lovely player, but he had more ups and downs than I would just say that I knew 100% what I was going to get with Robben. I knew he was going to go down the right-hand side, cut in, and shoot with his left foot and score. For that reason, I'm going with Robben.
Okay. Now, there have been a lot of defensive midfielders in the world of football. We've seen many over the years. I want you to rank these. These are just a few. Makelele, Roy Keane, Edgar Davids, Frank Rijkaard.
Number one, Makelele. They named the role after him, so he has to be number one. I'm going to go with Davids, number two.
Mm-hmm.
Because even though as a defensive midfielder, he could eat the ground around him, and he was almost like a Kante before Kante. and that he could run around the pitch and get the ball. Roy Keane, again, had more ability than people give him credit for, because they only saw his end of Man United career where he just sat in the defensive midfield role, but he was a box-to-box, he was an all-round midfielder. I'll put Rijkaard down number five, only because when I look at him, he was the most limited out of all those players. So I'm putting him down as the least, last one on the list.
Really, I'm surprised, because Frank Rijkaard, I mean, from the history books.
Yeah, but that's the history books. The history book talks to tell you that he was unbelievable. He played some great teams, and he did. But they also didn't tell you that he also got carried along by the stars of the show, which was Hullet, Van Basten, and in that famous Dutch side, he had friggin' Koeman. He had a lot of great players around him. So his job as a defensive midfielder, he didn't really do much. Like, he didn't really did enough, but he didn't really impact the game like the rest of them did. Makélélé had a role created for him because he was that good at it. Davids had so much more ability than all of them, the rest of them. Roy Keane was that man who led Manchester United through thick and thin on his own at sometimes, and scored vital goals, big performances against big teams. So Rijkaard, for me, didn't really do that on his own. He did it more as a collective.
Okay. Fine. Just because of that, yeah, I'm going to hit you with a last question to wrap up.
Sure.
Bench one, start one, sell one. Yeah, we're going right back this time. Dani Alves, Maicon, Cafu.
I'm starting Cafu for World Cups. Dani Alves, you can't touch what he did in terms of Barcelona. Didn't quite work out with Brazil, but that's because he had Cafu in front of him. So, yeah, I'm benching him and I'm selling Maicon because, you know, Gareth Bale, I'll never forget the sounds of taxi for Maicon. So in this game, taxi for Maicon, please. He's got to be sold.
Wow. Okay. This concludes Quick Fire with Shagan. Shagan, thank you so much for being on, coming on. We really appreciate you. For the listeners, please make sure to follow us on social media, on IG and Twitter. We have a lot of interesting things coming up. This was the 91st Minute.